It's time for Batter Up, the definitive Atlanta Braves podcast with hosts Joe Patrick and Caleb Johnson, giving you exclusive insight into our Braves from Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Here's Joe and Caleb.
Welcome into Batter Up on this Wednesday, October the 13th. It's a pretty exciting day as the Braves are, in fact, headed to the National League Championship Series after beating the Brewers 5-4 last night. Caleb Johnson in with my co-host Joe Patrick. Joe, how does it feel that after a season like we've watched, that the Braves are truly, in fact, headed onto another level of this playoff series?
They're back in the NLCS, you know, it's crazy. I was just on the radio this morning with John Fricke, just talking a little bit about the game. And, you know, the whole day really kind of felt like a microcosm of the Braves season overall, where they lose Jorge Soler going into the game. And that's something that the Braves have battled all year long, just losing guys in their order left and right, particularly outfielders. Losing somebody like that unexpectedly, you're not playing perfect baseball. You know, they made some mistakes during the game. Charlie Morton was okay. Yeah, not his best stuff. He was lively, but not the command wasn't quite there how he would have wanted it, I'm sure. But you made it through. You know, you got the timely hits that you needed at the right moments. And then obviously you have the huge hit for Freddie Freeman. It was the Braves best versus the Brewers best, and that's what you want to see. If you're a baseball fan, that's exactly why you watch the postseason. And it was awesome for us, at least on this side of the divide, to see Freeman come up so big in that moment. It was just kind of a glorious game to watch as a fan, to the way that it all unfolded.
Yeah, well, so we can start there with the Freddie home run in the eighth inning. There was a moment in maybe it was the sixth or seventh. I can't remember. Whatever Freddie batted before that, that I had this moment of thinking, you know, Freddie really never shows up in these moments. And it's one of those things that it's a very nitpicky thing to say, because obviously, like, this city loves Freddie Freeman and just, honestly, what he's brought talent-wise to this team. But I just kept thinking, it always seems like we get to the playoffs and Freddie just he just kind of fits in with the rest of the team. Like, there's never it's always someone else who has that picture moment where, you know, you're walking off a game, or as Jock Peterson has been kind of providing that crucial run support to win a game. And then it comes up in the eighth, and it's kind of one of those, like, would this be a perfect time? And then, bam, home run.
Yeah.
And,
go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, Snicker had kind of a funny kind of comment or story about this, because somebody was asking, like, were you hoping for that? Like, what were you thinking when he came up to bat? And he, of course, is like, I was thinking about the next inning, I was thinking about whatever, because, you know, with Josh Hader up there, you kind of figure that he's going to be successful a lot more often than not. I mean, he's probably the best reliever in all of baseball. And it was funny. Brian's like, whenever you're in that situation and you do think, man, can we just get a home run here? Like, that would be perfect, wouldn't it? That's when it never, ever, ever happens. So he's like, you're better off just distracting yourself with other thoughts. And then it's like, voila, I'm sure is how it felt last night for him.
Well, and then I think it blew my mind, too, that I think it was ESPN Stats and Info had that Freddie Freeman's the first player in franchise history to hit a go-ahead home run in the eighth inning or later in the postseason for the Braves.
Yeah,
that's just one of those, like, what? I mean, as many playoff series as this team has been in over the years, it just seems wild that was really the first true, like, heroic type of home run for the Braves. And I mean, it couldn't have come at a more perfect time. It seals. I mean, if there was ever a lingering doubt in my mind. And I'll be honest with you, there's been many doubts this season for me as to Freddie Freeman actually coming back to this baseball team, just because things happen, you know, things happen and decisions can be made based on results and money and a lot of other things. But if there was ever a doubt in my mind this season that Freddie Freeman was coming back to this baseball team, it was that swing. It was ending the game with Truist Park chanting Freddie.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that was obviously I wasn't there and you were. That had to have been just such a surreal moment for that ballpark.
I mean, people were chanting his name after the game was over, like while they were just walking back to their cars. yeah. And that's like when it hit me, I was like, man, what must it be like to be Freddie Freeman? And just like, yeah. What if like somebody was like, Caleb, like what? It's yeah. Like, you're like a god or something, you know? It's like, it's crazy. Maybe, you know, part of that is just like the life of an athlete, I guess. But like when you're on the level of Freddie Freeman and you have the support from the hometown fans that he has, it's unbelievable. And, you know, even it's not just the fans. I mean, Brian Snicker has talked about him again in the postgame press conference about just, you know, how much he relies on Freddie as the manager of the team, as a guy who's not only one of your most important contributors production-wise just on the field, but he's a guy who's going to play every single day, something we've talked about before. And somebody that Snick is like, he's a guy who I can talk to on like a personal level to kind of like, you know, get in touch with the clubhouse, just like get his opinion on the way certain guys are feeling. You know, it always helps to have a sounding board like that and somebody that you can really trust. And so I think that really speaks to a huge reason why he's really, you cannot allow him to go anywhere else. Like he's so ingrained in this team, not just in terms of what he provides to you in terms of the game winning home runs like he hit last night, but just the overall value cannot really be, you can't like put a price tag on it, honestly. Like to have somebody like that in the clubhouse is just phenomenal. And I was just so happy for him yesterday to have that moment.
Yeah,
absolutely. To, you know, I've never seen him like that. The just how ecstatic he was rounding the bases and taking that curtain call. It was just awesome. I don't, you know, the players, his teammates were asked about it as well after the game. And, you know, they were saying they've never seen him fired up like that. And just seeing him that fired up got everybody else fired up, because he's just normally so kind of stoic and reserved and keeps that calm demeanor. And so it was just the perfect cap to an amazing season, an amazing series. And, you know, I think that it really sets the table really nicely for what we'll talk about later in the show when they go on to face either the Dodgers or the Giants. But, you know, it was just an awesome moment that was.
Yeah. Well, so let's nitpick. I think the first thing that comes to mind is just game four starters. You and I came on here and talked a lot about what we thought this game was going to look like. And it included either Drew Smyly or Waskari Noah starting this game, because the idea was, well, the Braves are up 2-1. You know, this can clinch it. Obviously, you know, it was almost like this. Well, obviously, they're not going to send Charlie Morton back out there on 3 days rest. I mean, come on. That's not going to be the thing the Snit does, because it's not necessary, because your back isn't up against the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And then we see Charlie Morton is starting the game. And I immediately tweeted out that I had this feeling of, I don't like it. I don't like it. It makes me very uncomfortable.
Mm.
Charlie Morton's 37 years old. You know, this seems like the thing that backfires on you. And, you know, it's kind of one of those. And every time I talk badly about the Braves, it's kind of one of those, hey, I hope I'm wrong. I hope I am absolutely wrong. And he goes out and he hits Colton Wong to start the game.
Second and pitch, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. And I was kind of like, all right, here we go. You know, like, this is how we're going to get this thing started. And you could see through that first inning that things weren't sharp location wise, but the velocity was there.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like, all right. I mean, and then he gets through his outing. And I mean, so impressive. You know, and kind of that veteran, that arm that the Braves have really needed, and he showed up in the moment.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised at how lively the stuff was coming out of his hand. I mean, he was 97, 98 with the fastball, just like, you know, if as good, if not a little bit better, maybe a tick better than he might normally be. But you're right. The command was not there. He had a tendency to kind of tug on that fastball and miss glove side, you know, on that left side of the plate for him, which is, interestingly, it's the same way that he described the home run that he gave up to Rowdy Tellez in game one, which is they just tugged on the fastball a little bit. That was supposed to be on the outside part of the plate, came inside right into the wheelhouse of Rowdy, and he was able to hit it out for the homer. But it was good to see his arm look so live in that situation, just considering his age, because that's kind of probably the thing you were maybe worried about most, is that the stuff just wasn't going to be as good and he would end up being really hittable. So he wasn't, he did make some errors in that final inning. What was the end of the fourth inning?
It was the fourth, kind of
left some runners on base and ended up giving up a couple. But you got to take, I think, that kind of outing from him. Probably the way he went out there and performed was probably as good or better maybe than you would have expected from a Drew Smyly or even a Waskar Yanoa, who was in the picture, who would end up pitching later in the game and wasn't so great. So huge credit to Charlie Morton for going out there and just being willing to go out there and pitch in that circumstance where it's very easy to look bad in when you do that. But he, you know, I'm sure offered his services to do it clearly and you know, gave the Braves at least something to start the game with. And I'll say I actually was heartened when I saw that he was going to be the starter in the game. Because as much as I was saying that I thought they would go to Drew Smyly to start, just because of some of the statistical matchups, the way that it would line up, the Brewers hitting left-handers and everything like that, was never confident in Smyly, as I don't think we've really been super confident in Smyly all year. I was heartened to see that Morton was going, because that meant that he felt like he was up for it and they were willing to do it. I think it really pointed to the fact that they knew that this one was a really important game to win, because if they didn't win this game, then you're going back to Milwaukee playing on the road against probably the NL Cy Young winner. Like, that's, you don't want any part of that game, no matter, despite the fact that you would have Max Fried going for you. And then winning this game also has the knock-on benefits of being able to set yourself up perfectly going into the National League Championship Series. So this game was really, really important for them to win, despite the fact that it appeared like, well, the Braves have basically two shots at this thing to win it. I think it was really important that they got it done tonight, or last night.
Well, that was, like, so my whole thing was, I thought it was a bad idea to start Charlie. That was Caleb's personal opinion, because I was concerned about a 37-year-old Charlie Morton. However, you know, kind of when I saw the decision made, it kind of falls in line with this entire playoff series, with the way the season has kind of ended. Whereas, like, these are not your typical Brian Snicker decisions.
Yeah.
Like, this is not how he typically manages ball games, how he sets up ball games, how he sets off playoff series, which to Braves fans should be a sigh of relief, because if there's anything that Snit showed us last night, was he is going all out. Like, there is, we are not saving anybody. We are not, you know, looking far ahead. We are looking this game right here. We have to win it. Mm-hmm. What are we going to do to make sure we win it? And those kinds of decisions, look, I can't be upset at. It was the other ones, throwing Luke Jackson and Tyler Matzek out there, a fourth straight game, absolutely terrified me. Absolutely terrified me. I didn't like them going out in game three because of the fact that their stuff looked more hittable. And it just felt like, okay, we are one pitch away from this being a different game. And it felt like, and I even tweeted before those guys came out, you know, you talk about, Charlie gave up, he gave up a run. And then I think Jesse Chavez came in and kind of, you know, gave up another that got credited to him. And then Waskar Yanoa, the guy that we thought was surely going to be the guy to start this game, looked pretty bad, but he manages to get out of his inning. And so you just felt with the way this game was ebbing and flowing, and they were kind of staying on par with each other, that sending guys out there who had been seen multiple days in a row. And I'm just imagining the Brewers over there in the clubhouse with on the iPads, looking at, you know, what Luke Jackson and what Tyler Matzek had done previously in this series before they go up to bat. And I'm just thinking, like, that scared me so much. And they came through.
Yeah.
And I was just like, well, that's the easiest way to shut me up is, you know, to show up, pitch hard, and get through your innings.
Yeah, no, I mean, if you looked at these matchups before the playoffs started, you know, when you looked at Braves Brewers, you would have thought that clearly the Brewers have the better bullpen, that benefits them. And just in general, I think if you were to look at a weakness on the Braves, if you were to look at like one of the position groups or whatever, it would be the bullpen. It'd be like, what can you get out of the bullpen in this series? And the bullpen ended up not giving up a single run outside of Oscar Noah's two that he gave up last night. And he's not even like a regular bullpen member. So it's kind of like, if you take him out of the picture, no runs given up by this group that was throwing in every single game. And I do think that they kind of really embraced the structured roles that they have, where it was like Luke Jackson was coming in, and then it was like Luke had the seventh, Matzik had the eighth, Will Smith had the ninth. I mean, I know that that's not the way that like Craig Counsell probably would have managed things, you know, where he was you know, more analytical in his approach, I guess. But I think that those guys in the Braves bullpen really kind of embrace that structure that Brian Snicker set up for them. And I mean, I know it's not kind of the modern way to use a bullpen, and sure, and I, you know, I would have qualms with at least one decision that he made last night, which was to bring in Oscar Yanoa to face that portion of the lineup that he did instead of AJ Minter, who would have had better matchups, lefty-lefty, against a guy like Rowdy Tellez, who ended up hitting another huge, massive home run for them, for the Brewers last night. But, you know, aside from that, I just think that you just can't really give this Braves bullpen enough credit for what they did, and it really, you know, gives you a lot of confidence going in, you know, throughout the rest of this playoffs, thinking that if you get this kind of bullpen performance from these guys, on top of the starting pitching that this team has shown it has in its arsenal, you got to love your chances no matter who you're playing, you know, because you can essentially kind of bank on shutting teams down pretty well more often than not.
The other part of this game that, terrified me once again and made me think it was going to matter way more than it or more than it ended up mattering is a review that then not become a review. Had you ever seen any sort of scenario where a play is called into review and then it is determined that it is unreviewable because apparently only catches made in the outfield can be reviewed? Like, this is textbook Major League Baseball embarrassing themselves once again, that everyone watching that game could see a ball bounce and hit the ground and go into I can't even remember who was behind the plate at that point for the Brewers.
I don't know.
Go ahead.
Well, you know, I still don't understand it either way. People more versed in baseball, like Brian Snicker, was talking about it last night, and he was saying that he actually understands why the rule would be defined in such a way in terms of like infield, outfield, because of runner placement, which I don't quite follow the logic, but I'm sure it makes sense. If Brian Snicker is saying that makes sense, then it makes sense. But what he did say that doesn't make sense as it pertains to this rule is if the ball's in foul territory, like if it's in foul territory, then you're not worried about like where runners might be and how like replaying the play and overturning a call would affect like where the runners are, because it was a foul. So like they're not going to be advancing, especially if it's obviously fielded by an infielder. So yeah, that doesn't, I mean, Brian Snicker was pretty cordial about it. He didn't, you know, make it too big of a fuss. Obviously, he was pretty happy with the result and everything, but that didn't make a lot of sense. But I will say, you know, that was by far as loud as the stadium had been in that game, and you know, maybe only beaten by Jock Peterson's home run in the game prior, it was the boos that came down were like, it was actually kind of cool, honestly. Because you like, you hear lots of, you know, when you're in press box, like you get used to hearing like lots of like very loud cheers when something like a Jock Peterson home run happens or something like that. But to hear the sound of the booing be so loud is like a different sound. And it's, you could tell, like, it was palpable. And, you know, Travis d'Arnaud said after the game that really fired up the team. Hearing that reaction from the fans, and then they immediately answered and came back and scored two runs to tie up the game later that inning. So, it was awesome.
Because I think part of it too that just added a little injury to insult was the fact that it was a ball hit by Adam Duvall, which kind of just fuel to the fire, as we can talk about, you know, Adam Duvall and his base running blunders, honestly, are just, they're so head scratching that they make you start thinking of, all right, there had to have been something going on in his brain. You know, there had to have been something that he thought that he just absolutely missed out on, which was Adam Duvall is at second base, ball is hit in Christian Yelich's direction, and Duvall just books it around third, heads home,
hauling ass.
and then I think what was kind of one of the funniest things was Austin Riley standing at second, kind of like, what do I do?
Yeah.
I guess I'll stand here and you can tag me. Because I think too,
well, he was going too, you know, it was like,
well, but I think there was some, because if I understood this correctly, if they had actually just tagged Austin Riley instead of stepping on the bag, that would have come after Adam Duvall touched home. Technically the run would have counted,
right,
as
right.
The flip side of that was going on, the game before, where there was some questioning of you know, who could score,
right,
sort of thing. But just this moment of when that play happens and Adam Duvall just books it home, they put the camera on the dugout and you just saw Brian Snicker jump up and run, and he just ran to the tunnel. And I was like, yeah, to have a microphone in that, you know, area, probably would have sounded like a sailor ship for the number of things that Brian Snicker was probably saying. And it also just kind of gets back to this point of, when did Adam Duvall, amongst the other Braves, but clearly him because he's done it two games in a row, when did he just forget how to run the bases?
Yeah. No, I mean, they're like mental mistakes, you know? That's the weird thing, is it's not even a physical thing. And yeah, that's just, it's bizarre. Go ahead.
But he's a guy that I feel so betrayed by, because I was clamoring for this guy last offseason of like, you got to bring this guy back. Then they didn't. Then they trade for him, you know, right there at the deadline. And I'm like, oh, man, like, this is the guy. He hit so many home runs in the second half of the season that you just thought, all right, you know, this is going to come to the playoffs and he's going to be such a huge part. And then he's just a part of these just massive head scratching plays that, as I was texting you, and I think my first thought was, would this play be as bad if yesterday hadn't happened? Mm-hmm. Then I thought on it a while and I was like, no, yeah, it really would have been. Really would have been. And then my second thought was, I was like, what was going through his mind? And the only thing that I could come up with is that he thought there were two outs. And I think I saw a Major League Baseball writer tweet out that, like, the first thought that he had of Adam Duvall was that Duvall must have assumed that ball was going to drop in front of Yelich.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second thought was he didn't know how many outs there were. And he was like, honestly, the second one is worse. And I was thinking, actually, no, I would take forgot how many outs there were over, misreading the ball, I guess. But it just,
well, I mean, it was kind of a blooper, but at the end, it wasn't really that even, it wasn't that close of a,
no,
it wasn't even like a sliding catch or anything like that. It did look like, off the bat, I could see why you might think that it could potentially drop, but it was one of those ones that just seemed to like must have had a lot of backspin or something, and it just kind of kept floating in the air.
Yeah, but I think even with that being the case, that like there is a real chance this ball is going to drop. I still don't think that you as a base runner are ever just
are
like
reacting like that. Yeah. The only thing I could think of in that situation, I don't think this is the case, but I'm just going to kind of throw this out there, which is that maybe there's some game theory that with the pitcher coming up next, you might as well just run that thing out in hopes that it does drop. And if not, then you're going to look silly, but you're probably not going to be bad. And if, you know, Charlie Morton went down easily on the next, you know, he would have been up with two outs with a runner on second. You know, technically that's a run scoring opportunity, but he was down easily on the next inning when he hit for himself. So maybe they would have pinch hit for him in that situation. I don't know, but it certainly was bizarre. And I think it was Travis d'Arnaud that was on first base, if I remember correctly.
You're right.
But again, that was the weird, like he was going too. So, and there are so many things about this I don't understand. Like, is Ron Washington not like yelling at his ass to like get back? Which I didn't notice. Yeah, I was not paying attention to Ron Washington and what he was doing while all that was happening. But just a truly bizarre play. And again, we talked about it in our game three reaction. You know, what did we say? We said, you know, might be wise for Brian Snicker and like the coaching staff, like send a message to the team. Like, let's like take it a little bit easier on the base pass, maybe not be so aggressive, because the game three one was worse. That literally cost them a run. Like, it just cost them a run on the board. At the end of the day, this one didn't, but it almost seemed worse because of the absurdity of it. Like, it was just like, what is going on? It's like something you would watch in like a little league game, you know, like a kid, like, you know, rounding the bases as hard as you can, not knowing that there was one out.
Because when you're watching the game at home, when that play happens, and you see Travis d'Arnaud standing close to second base, I'm thinking, why is he not touching the base? Touch the base! Like, what are you doing? Yeah. And then they just kind of like walk over and stand on the base, and then they cut to, you know, Adam Duvall running through home, and you're like, wait, no, that doesn't make sense. What happened? You know, having this realization of like, no, that was not, you know, that was not what I just witnessed here. I think that was that outlandish of just a
probably less consequential but more crazy than the one in game three. But either way, it's like, who are you and what have you done with Adam Duvall? It's like Scooby-Doo, like rip the mask off, and it's like some like Brewers guy who's like, I would have done it if it weren't for you measly kids.
And I think that's part of it too with him, is that his power really hasn't shown up this postseason either. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, it's kind of one of those like get in line as far as guys whose power hasn't necessarily shown up. But I guess I'm more so expected that to be there and for him to kind of be inconsequential in the lineup, and then to make those so, you know, random of plays. It's just kind of like, come on, man. I'm hoping that things look better when the Braves head out to the NLCS.
We talk about the aggressive base running, and then Freddie Freeman had a hit later on in the game. I can't remember what inning it was, but it was kind of just like a pop-up that fell in, and he booked it for a second as well. He made it in for a double there, but like that was also an aggressive base running move. And it just seemed like, despite what we said yesterday, I don't think the Braves had any intention of kind of becoming less aggressive or becoming more conservative on the base pass. They seem just as aggressive as ever. So, you know, maybe those are just, you know, I'm sure Freddie on that one was just trying to, he was just trying to make a play, you know, and get a second, which he did. So good for him.
Well, I was about to say, it makes a bit of a difference when you actually make the play.
Exactly. Yeah, for sure.
You get that benefit of the doubt.
We want aggressive base running that succeeds, successful aggressive base running. That's the ideal.
Yeah. All right, Joe, let me ask you this question just straight up. Who do you want the Braves to see, Dodgers or Giants?
I want the Giants. Not that I think that there's like a huge difference between the two in terms of the quality of baseball teams there. They are obviously, the Giants won that division over the Dodgers. So clearly a great team. For me, it comes down to just like my emotions and like my personal biases, where I've seen too much of the Dodgers in the postseason. Don't want any more of them. Like, I've seen enough. I just don't have any confidence, like, seeing the uniforms against each other, you know, in the matchups. Just like, just don't want, just brings up the bad vibes, the bad juju. Mm-hmm. So, and then also, you know, aside from that, you've got Trey Turner now on the Dodgers, who, notorious Braves killer, just seems like he gets a hit every single time he's up to bat against the Braves. And, you know, Max Scherzer, another, you know, acquisition they made from the Nationals. I never want to be going up against Max Scherzer in a playoff game. So they've just got too many dangerous weapons. You know, Urias has been one of the best pitchers in baseball this season. Walker Buehler, we know the kind of quality he has. You know, again, when you go through the players individually, you could say, you know, the Giants also have really good starting pitching and really good hitters, a good lineup. So I don't know if there's that much to distinguish between the two, but I just would have way better vibes against the Giants. And I feel like the Braves played the Giants really well and were able to beat them pretty resoundingly a couple times here late in the season. So that gives me some hope as well. What about you?
So I am split into the who do I want the Braves to face? The Giants. Who do I think the Braves are going to face? The Dodgers. It just felt, especially watching that game four last night between the Giants and the Dodgers have that, I don't know, they have that aura. They have that thing that Jock Peterson has kind of brought to this team, which is that clutch ability, that it is so hard to fight through. Can you talk about, like, the Giants starting pitching really doesn't scare me that much.
I know, like, the names are not, it's like,
no,
you know,
like, they're getting it done. I can't discount that, but the names don't terrify me. Also, mainly because there's a lot of former Braves.
Yeah. Like that, Kevin Gausman, like, we can get Kevin Gausman.
Yeah. Who was the other? Alex Wood. LaStella. Like, it's just like a lot of these guys are, as former Braves, it's almost kind of like, you know what? You were the guys who couldn't get it done before. So let's play you guys in the playoffs and watch you crumble and go home early, kind of thing. You know, I think that's more of it. There's just something that tells me that the Dodgers are going to figure this thing out, because they are so talented, because they've got, as much as the Dodgers themselves are piecemealing a lot of this stuff together, especially their bullpen. But they are getting it done. And also I think too, you know, you got Brandon Belt missing on the Giants side. You got Max Muncy missing on the Dodgers side. And I can't tell which of those two guys is going to be able to come back the next series. But selfishly, you know, as a Braves fan, I'm like, well, whoever the Braves face, I hope whichever those guys that's, you know, that they're playing with can't come back.
Right.
You know, the Braves are going to need all the help they can against, you know, those surefire teams.
One other thing about this series, or, you know, I don't know if this plays in the Braves' favor. I don't know if you could possibly predict, probably wouldn't actually, but if you're playing in San Francisco, you're dealing with, like, actual weather conditions when you play there at night. You know, we've seen it get windy there, it's cold there, so just something extra that
on the water
that will change things, depending on which two teams you play. In LA against the Dodgers, you're gonna have pretty much ideal conditions when you play there, but it gets really cold in San Francisco at night, and it's just really blustery where that field is. So that would be something that you have to deal with. The Giants would probably be better equipped to deal with it, considering it's their home ballpark and they kind of have to play in it all the time, especially, you know, when it gets later in the season here and it gets colder and stuff like that. But just another little interesting aspect of the matchups to watch out for.
So I get, like, since we can, and the Jorge Soler news is out that he has COVID. As far as I understand, and you tell me if I'm wrong, Joe, he's out for 10 days, he's out for, I guess, at least 10 days, but he has to test negative, in order to come back with the team. Is that what you know, as far as you know?
So the 10 day thing is that I saw Dave O'Brien tweet that, that's what he heard from a source or something about that there was, like, a minimum 10 days. Is that where you saw that, or did you see that somewhere else?
I saw somewhere else on Twitter that someone, no one is confirmed.
Right. Then that's what I'm going to say. Like, I don't know if that's the case or not. Very well could be. I'm not necessarily denying it. In fact, Brian Snicker was asked about the 10-day thing in the postgame press conference yesterday, which is kind of, it was like a national writer who, or reporter who asked that. It's like anybody who's familiar with Brian Snicker would know, like, he doesn't know what the.
Doesn't know.
And yeah. That's exactly what he said. He's like, don't ask me. I have no idea.
Yeah.
Which I thought was kind of funny.
Yeah. He's just going to talk to whoever is in the know and be like, can I get him? You know, am I going to get him back?
Yeah. Or I was kind of chuckling even while the question was being asked. Is like, there's no ways. Anyway, yeah. If it is 10 days, you know, I saw, like, you know, I think Dave tweeted something about, you know, he'll miss a minimum of 10 games. And then saying, just adding a little comment that you'd be like, you could miss him for the entire series, which I guess is technically possible if it's a short series, if one of the teams is getting swept. But, you know, 10 days, if you count yesterday as a day that he missed, he would be back for game 4. So that would be 10 days.
Well,
so it's not like, I think you could get him back in the middle of the series. I think the bigger question when it comes to a COVID case like this is, you know, what's his form going to be like if he is able to return? Like, is he able to swing and work? Does he have workout facilities like where he lives? You know, because he came here midseason. So is he living in a place that has, facility, you know, like a cage or something that he can hit out of? Like, oh, there's so many questions about this.
Cause that's the thing is, like, right now with him testing positive, there's no, all right, well, let me go down to my local batting cages, you know, and take some swings, or let me go to the Braves training facility and take some hacks. Like, no, he's got to quarantine. Like, he's got to stay wherever he went is, as far as I understand, you know, and if they're taking this seriously, like, that is where he's going to stay.
I almost wonder if the Braves could, like, set up a quarantine, a place for him to quarantine that would have some, like, training, some things he could do if he's feeling well enough to do it. You never know with COVID, like, how hard it's going to hit somebody.
That's part of it, too, is you have no idea what the lingering effects, just short term, much less long term, but short term are going to be. And also, the Braves are going to have to make roster decisions before they're exactly sure what's going to happen with him. So I'm of the opinion that he's going to get left off this roster, this NLCS roster, just for the fact of, as you were saying, maybe he could come back game 4, game 5, but because there's so many if, ands, or buts, I mean, maybe you leave him on in place of, like, a Terrence Gore. Otherwise, I don't think he makes this roster.
Here's my question about the roster, which is that, couldn't the Braves just put him on the roster and then immediately say that he's, like, he's on the COVID IL and they can bring up a taxi squad member and then that can replace him, but then he can just, like, come back when he's healthy? Like, that would be almost like gaming the system in a way. But I don't know what exactly, because the COVID injury list is so specific to COVID. It's not like a normal injury list. So I don't know exactly what the rules are on the thing, on something like that.
Yeah, you're right. The COVID injury list is more of a, like, that was what part of the that's what the taxi squad is for.
Right.
Is that you could replace him with someone on the taxi squad, as they did by bringing up
Pache.
Yeah, Pache. And then when healthy, could immediately make that switch. So yeah, you're right. I was forgetting that from my brain, but
I don't even know, with the COVID injury, like, obviously in one series, you're not going to have a player go down with COVID and then come back from COVID in the same series. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, like, that's, I think, the interesting part of this is, we know what the protocol is. Like, when a player gets COVID, you replace them on the roster with somebody. But what happens when you have a player with COVID and you get to, like, is Soler on the taxi squad and, like, gets to come back once he clears for, you know,
Soler would be on the roster. And then you would use the taxi squad like they did in this game to call out Pache, and then
Pache would be called up for game 1, essentially.
Yeah,
and he would play until you know, whenever Soler could come back, and then he would kind of resume his place on the roster. And that, and again, we should say, you know, the thing here too is that, like, it doesn't necessarily have to be Pache that is the taxi squad guy. Like, they could make Terrence Gore, if they want to keep carrying Terrence Gore and Christian Pache on the same roster, they could have Terrence Gore be the taxi squad guy, and then have Soler replace him in later on in the series if they would rather keep Pache up there. It'll be interesting to me to see what kind of changes, if changes at all, that this team does make to its roster for you know, well, for this next roster construction.
Yeah, I was just about to say, Ricky in the comments was asking, do you think they bring Strider back to the bullpen, and do you think that Pache is a better option than Waters to replace Soler in the outfield? I'll answer that second question wholeheartedly. Yeah. Yes. Just from what we've seen of those two guys, just the fact that Pache has the major league experience, I think for this team, that's a no-brainer decision. However, I've been wrong before, because I didn't see Dylan Lee making this roster over Spencer Strider. And I was very surprised to see Strider come in at the end of the season as a possible, you know, like, late season move. But like we said, I mean, as far as Strider making the NLCS roster, I don't know. I mean, I honestly can't say, because I thought he was a sure thing after the way the Braves handled him at the end of the regular season, and the fact that he had, you know, that 99, 100 mile fastball.
Yeah.
I thought that was a lock. And then they didn't make that move. And, you know, like there's been so many things, and I'm kind of like, I don't know.
Well, I mean, it's kind of impossible to know, because you don't, there's not little sample size. There's really, like, hardly, there's not really a sample at all on some of these guys. Not anything you could remotely base, like, a decision off of. I mean, obviously the Braves will have more of a information on some of these players that will obviously inform their decision making. You know, I'm with you on Strider. I think, yeah, I was talking to Fricky about it this morning. I would have him on the roster. I thought he was going to be on the division series roster. Yeah. I would put him on the championship series roster.
Well, because here's my thing. There was never a moment in this NLDS series that I thought, you know who I would want to see right now? Dylan Lee. You know, I'm sorry.
And
this is not anything personal towards him. It's not that I don't like the guy. It's not that I don't think that he can grow into, you know, being a part of this bullpen, being a part of this team. I just don't know yet, because I didn't see anything. I didn't see anything flashy out of him that would truly catch guys off guard like what Spencer Strider brought. There was a moment in this game, or in this series, I should say, where had Spencer Strider walked into the game, I'd have been like, okay, game three. There was definitely a point that if Spencer Strider had come in and, you know, and kind of fanned three guys with his fastball, mixing in some off speed, you know, I'd have been like, yeah, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But the fact that that didn't happen, the fact that Snit decided to lean so hard onto Luke and Tyler, made me think, all right, well, honestly, doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who those other guys are going to be, because Snit's clearly going to lean on the guys who have done it, before.
His tried and true guys, his core guys, which is right. You know, so we didn't see Dylan Lee, Jacob Webb, or Drew Smyly. Those were the three pitchers for the Braves that did not pitch at all in the division series. So I think that if you're looking at somebody who would be getting replaced, I think it's clearly one of those three. It seems to me, so we had talked about Drew Smyly and our thinking, and the reason why he would have started game four was the fact that it seemed like the situation that would be why you put him on the roster. What would be to pitch that game against the Brewers, against, you know, to have the left-handed starter going against them, who they really struggle against. But it does seem now, so considering they did not use him in that situation, I feel like they must think of him as the kind of long extra inning guy. If it goes into extras, if he's like pretty much the last arm on the that you can go to, he will like finish out a game. That goes a long ways. So, well, if that's his role, then I think he's probably safe for this mm-hmm. next roster. He probably just had the same role, and you probably won't see much of him in the championship series unless you have a crazy situation like that. So then you're looking at probably Jacob Webb was warming up to go into the game yesterday. Mm-hmm. So I think that he's probably a guy that Brian Snicker would rely on. I think it's Dylan Lee. I think you're right. I think it's probably between Spencer Strider and Darren Lee. I think that's Dylan Lee. That's probably the options that the Braves are looking at there. I can't really see them doing anything else kind of crazy.
But it also just seems like you want to add to the list of weird decisions to be made. If the Braves manage to bring up Spencer Strider, like that's a total game move. Like that's a total play in chess kind of thing. And I don't know if there'd be a matchup that they like Strider over Lee or whatever, but that just feels like, yeah, to not bring him up for this series and then to make that move. Yeah. I don't know. There's just something, it feels so bizarre, but then at the same time could be completely inconsequential because those guys could potentially never get touched. If this upcoming series gets managed the way the previous one has, however, it seems pretty obvious the way that the Giants and the Dodgers are playing that when the Braves get into this next series, it's going to be a lot of runs. I don't imagine the same, 2-1, 3-0 type scores. I think there's going to be some pretty big runs scored, more like what we saw last night with the Braves and Brewers. So with that, there could, the potential of more arms getting used seems pretty likely, especially like you talked about with extra inning games.
Yeah, definitely. I think the low scoring games probably benefit the Braves. If you're holding teams to that little amount, you got to like your chances. But you have to think that things are going to start going a different way. I'm just trying to think if there are any other obvious changes, and I can't really think of any of players you might want to put on this roster that weren't on the division series roster. I'm thinking maybe even a Shea Langeliers. Like he's been one of the Braves' top, minor league hitters, position players this season. And, I know they already have William Contreras on there, but, either one of those guys could be a decent pinch hitting option. And if you burn that guy as a pinch hitter, you're not burning your backup catcher as well. So maybe you could add someone like that on. I don't know. Who knows? We'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. All right. Anything else you want to get to, Joe, before we get out of here?
Not that I can think of. I mean, I just want to yesterday was like what sports are all about, it was just like so awesome. Especially like I've been thinking like for Freddie, when he said something that really struck me, which was that when you're a kid, this is exactly the kind of situation you think of, it's like you're going up against the top closer, game on the line. It wasn't technically a walk-off, but, I just still can't get over just how dramatic that all was. And, I feel very appreciative that we were just kind of able to witness something like that because, that's why we watch the game. That's why those guys play the game. And so, I would just kind of urge everybody to just kind of cherish the moment. I mean, I know that obviously there's hopefully more on the way for this team. Hopefully they can build on last year's NLCS. I do think they're better set up this year going into the NLCS than they were last year, despite the fact that they're on their second and a half string outfield now that Soler's gone. Simply because the rotation's in so much better shape. You have so much more confidence in those guys than you would have last year, where you were piecing things together, starting AJ Minter in games, things like that.
Well, so I guess, so then let me ask this before we get out of here. Because you saying that makes me wonder how you feel about do you think it matters, Giants or Dodgers? Do you think the Braves are better than either of these two teams, or are they going to come into this series as the lesser of whatever team they face? Because I think so. I think
100. Yeah, I agree.
Okay.
I think bookies will have either the Giants or the Dodgers as pretty heavy favorites in the series. Yeah.
I just wanted to test the Joe Patrick's pulse over
the optimism, the heat check, as Dominique Bogans might say.
Exactly. I just wanted to make sure because, you know, I mean.
But I mean, they were heavy, heavy underdogs last year, and they probably should have won that series if not for some.
They should have. Let's be honest. They should have.
I guess the point being is that it's a short series. So despite the fact that maybe, you know, if you spread it over 100 games, it would probably be a lot more obvious who might win. It's a short series one, so that kind of gives any matchup you're going to have, you know, there's always going to be a team that has maybe an extra ability to pull out something out of their butts. But you also have to look at the Braves' record over the second half of the season. You know, when you look at their win totals matched up over the entire season, it looks like not that competitive. But if you only look at what the Braves have done in the second half of the season, they're playing over 600 ball. You know, they're among the best teams, if not, you know, the hottest team in baseball in the second half of the season. So I think that that's something you really have to take into account when you're looking at matchups like this.
I want to finish this with a question that you brought up at the beginning of this. You said that you were kind of asked, is this the end of the road for the Braves, or do the Braves have a team that can truly make a World Series run? Look, I will say this once again. I feel like I've said it on this show so many times. The fact that baseball is the type of sport that teams go on runs, and teams that it maybe really doesn't make sense for them to be in their position, for them to win a World Series. I think of, you know, just a couple of years ago, like I brought up the Nationals and what they did before, that it really didn't make sense. It didn't seem like it was their time yet. It's not the Braves' time yet. The Braves have so many things to stand in their way of truly winning a World Series. But I mean, they've made it this far. Like, they have gotten to this point. It's not necessarily always made sense. And so while I don't think this Braves team is a World Series champion, I've been proven wrong so many times just this season alone. So I'm not willing to count them out, because why not at this point?
Sometimes, maybe this is just me, but I feel like as a sports fan, sometimes when it doesn't feel like your time actually is unlocks when something about the team that gives you something special that does allow you to go on and win. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes when you do feel like, we are stacked this year, this is the year we're going to do it, everything, we got everything going for us, something happens, or there's like some pressure mounts because you have this expectation on you that you're supposed to, you know, win something, and you don't end up doing it. So I do think that is something that could potentially just psychologically work in the Braves' favor, the fact that they feel like they're playing with house money, or that's not the way they think about it, but that's what they feel, you know. So I do think that is kind of a little extra dynamic. I was glad you pointed that out.
Yeah, so Braves fans, have some optimism. I won't tell you what team to root for in game five of this Dodgers and Giants series, but either way, we'll know pretty soon and be able to figure out how this Braves team is going to match up. So once again, Joe and I will be with you right after game one of the NLCS.
We should talk about because I tweeted out that I was like, see you in game three from Truist Park, but apparently they would host game one if they play the Dodgers. When we left the press conference room, the Major League Baseball communications person was like, see you guys on the West Coast. So I wasn't really even thinking about it because I knew the other two teams both had way better records. So I was just like, all right, yeah, they're going to be on the road for
that's
the first
right,
game.
Because but they were
the wild card cannot
because
host
because they were
first
a
game.
Wild card.
Yeah. So we'll see. But we'll be here immediately post-game, the road games and the home games. There will just be a little bit of a delay, if not the next morning. It just depends on what our bosses want. So, but we'll be here reacting to all the games eventually on Facebook Live.
All right. So for my co-host, Joe Patrick, I'm Caleb Johnson. Thanks for watching Batter Up.